96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Yawning this morning. Good morning, Bahamas. You're on the clock with Aaron Green, and today is Tuesday, March the 30th, 2021. You know, in the morning, when you open up your WhatsApp and people are sending you inspirational and devotional messages to brighten up your day? Well, in my WhatsApp, people are sending me pictures of fruit trees and flowers and birds and things. And that's what brightens up my day every morning. So I want to say thank you to that person that sent me the picture of the Dray Lord of Dilly. It is Dilly time. Look here, I get you all some Dilly. Let me tell you why. Because Dilly is a natural sugar, right? You shouldn't overwhelm yourself with any sugar. It's argued that sugar is poison, right? And I agree with that argument that refined sugars are dangerous our body, and in too large amounts, they become toxic, right? But when you have the opportunity to eat local or naturally produced sugars, take advantage of that, right? So maybe reduce the amount of soft drinks that you consume on a weekly basis and fill that space with fruit and water. I'm telling you, you're gonna love yourself for it. My guest co-host today is Mr. Darwin Thompson. And later in the show, we're going to be speaking with Mr. Valentino Elliott from Marijuana Bahamas. And we're going to be talking about some of the strategies that they're employing, about their lobby and the issues that they are focused on. And I got some highlights today. I am remiss. There's some people I was supposed to say happy birthday to, and I forget. I forget because I was counting mangoes, right, this whole weekend. So I want to say happy, happy Earth Day and birthday to Mr. Lester Cox, the man responsible for me being in this seat right now. He gave me an opportunity, you know, to join the platform, and I will forever, ever be grateful to Mr. Cox for that.
Happy birthday, right? Mr. Cox.
Happy birthday, Lester. And I cannot go back to the U.S., unless I tell my nephew, Mr. Makani Lambert, happy, happy birthday. I missed you on Sunday. I was recuperating from the market and my Saturday gallivanting. But I love you. And even though these people in the Bahamas don't think that we should change our constitution so you could be one of us, you will forever and always be one of us. That's right. Happy birthday, Lester, and happy birthday, Makani, and happy birthday to all of the people that are celebrating a birthday this week, this month, in the beginning of April. Go love yourself. Go buy a fruit tree. That's the best gift you could give to yourself, right? Anywhere from 3 to 7 years, you have the gift that keeps on giving. Ah, wow. Listen, yesterday's conversation was a little bit heavy. We were talking about traffic. It was heavy because the reason I wanted to talk about traffic was because we had two traffic fatalities over the weekend, right?
Another one that same day.
Right, so I can say now, since yesterday's show, there were reports of another traffic fatality in Abaco. And then I saw a video. In fact, somebody sent me a video while I was on air, but I was unable to access it. A video detailing a series of collisions, right? And it seems that somebody was running from the police. Right. It damaged a number of vehicles at a time when people could barely afford to maintain their vehicles, let alone repair and replace them. And yesterday afternoon, I saw a video detailing a horrible accident on Samilo Butler Highway. And I'll just say, from what I saw in the video, it may have been a fatality.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
So these traffic conversations are important.
Of course, yes.
I ain't gonna do them too much, right? But let me tell you why they are so important. One, even without data, we know that the efficient movement of people, goods, and services drive the economy, right? And with proper traffic flow and management, like a properly flowing traffic system, sort of equalizes the economy, right? Because it means mom, who is a small micro home-based business, can deliver food, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of at the same rate that a delivery service or a larger company could deliver food.
Mm-hmm.
The second reason is that too many vehicle involved fatalities.
Right.
And injuries resulting in loss of quality of life. So we sort of dismiss an accident if there was no loss of life, but we really don't take into account the physical injury that people experience, how it impacts their life, and how it can greatly diminish their quality of life as they go older and what they can do. Third reason, even without data, we know that we're spending too much money repairing and replacing damaged cars.
Yeah.
Right? It's particularly now when we have this, we're buying from Japan.
Right.
We get a lot of cars, but people have difficulty finding the parts.
Yeah.
Right? So you damage somebody's car, they can't find a simple part, something that should only cost a couple $100s. They have to get rid of the whole car because that part is unavailable. Right?
Undrivable.
Number four, our children. They watch and learn everything we do. They are constantly modeling our behavior, and we can see them. I can see them. I don't know about y'all, because some of y'all be watching your phone when you driving or sitting in the passenger seat, right?
Yeah.
But I can literally see young people modeling the very same behavior they witness.
From the adults.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whether they're in the car with the adult or they're on the sidewalk.
Exactly. Especially the sidewalk.
And number five. We touched on this a bit yesterday, and I think this is one of the most important ones, except for the loss of life, right? Driving requires and teaches spatial awareness and critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. Knowing the dimensions of your vehicle and the roads you're driving on. Do you know how many people don't know how big their car is?
Nope.
They don't know how much space it occupies.
Right.
They don't know how, when they park their vehicle, it impacts the use of the space by other. They're just unaware entirely.
Right.
Too many people are veering into other people's lanes because they're doing things like trying to avoid potholes.
Exactly.
Or they're on their phone, right?
Right.
And they didn't see the pothole coming.
Mm-hmm.
They think, right, that gives you the right to veer into my lane.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But if you learn to practice spatial awareness, you see the pothole a good distance ahead of you, and you have the time and space
to react.
Ah.
And seeing it ahead of you means not tailgating the guy in front of you, because then you hit it anyway.
Right.
Not seeing it, right?
Right. And turn signals.
Oh.
Right?
Do they even exist?
No, well, here's what it is, Darwin. There is an extra high duty on turn signals.
Yeah.
Right? You pay duty on the car, and apparently you get paid like 5,000%.
Like, yeah,
so people don't use them because they don't want to break them. They don't have to replace them.
Yeah.
Right? And this is a big problem. And something that, you know, I didn't think I would see here, but I'm now seeing it far too often.
Mm-hmm.
People who miss their turn and think that they have the right to reverse in the road.
Oh. Yeah,
to get their turn. Or they're in the wrong lane and they think they have the right to turn across traffic.
Across lanes. Yeah.
When you had a lot of time to figure out where you were going and what you needed to do to achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But those skills that we could be teaching our young people in this experience of using the roads will really help them in their personal development and their academic development.
Exactly.
But I think for today's conversation, these two last points are, I think, the most important.
Yes.
We are asking the government to treat us like responsible adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
They think we're not responsible enough to gamble. They think we're not responsible enough to invest our money wisely in foreign markets and with foreign investors. They don't even think we're responsible enough to use cannabis. But if our behavior on the roads and our driving culture is a barometer or an indicator that the state is using, I would agree with them.
Yeah.
I would tell them, these people do not want, nor do they understand what nice things are. Mm-hmm. But point number 7, the social contract, right? This is why these conversations about traffic are so important. The road belongs to everyone, right?
Right, right.
With our taxation system, everybody who paying taxes, paying in to the fund that maintains and builds the roads.
Yeah.
It belongs to the pedestrians. It belongs to the cyclists. It belongs to the motor scooterists. Mm-hmm. Even though some of y'all motor scooterists don't know how to motor your scooter. And refuse to follow the rules of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Refuse to do what is necessary for other drivers to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
And motor scooterists love to create a third lane.
Yeah.
Right? While traffic is at a standstill. And then when it starts moving again, they like to pull right in front of your vehicle.
Right.
With no turn signal.
Nothing.
No indicator. Right? They like to pull their third lane straight up to the front of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And now some motor scooterists, and I'm saying this particularly to you young black men that do not have enough resources to invest in the proper safety gear.
Right.
Riding your scooter in your slippers with no helmet. And your A-style sleeveless vest, right?
Perfect situation for a bod burn.
Just looking for strawberries.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Even those people have a right to be on the road. Right. And you know who else have a right to be on the road? Our older drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They have a right to be on the road. Once they're licensed and insured,
they have that right, yeah.
They have that right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're making 25 miles an hour in the 25-mile-per-hour zone, don't be mad at them. That's their right to follow the rules on
exactly.
the road. It can
exactly.
be frustrating, right? But they also have a right to use the road.
Exactly.
The second is this social contract thing. We all agree to learning, knowing, and following the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
We all agree to give way to road users that have the right of way. Like pedestrians on the pedestrian crossing opposite Ebenezer Methodist on Shirley Street.
Yes.
I had a personal experience when I was trying to cross the road to go to my insurance agent. And I was standing on the pedestrian crossing that I stood on when it was safe.
Right.
And I tell you, no lie, no less than 30 cars sped past me while I was standing on the pedestrian crossing. An adult with enough sense to not proceed.
Right.
Until the cars had stopped. But imagine if that was a child who had been taught how to use a pedestrian crossing and absentmindedly started walking.
Mm-hmm.
No less than 30 cars. Another part of the social contract is we do not drive unless we are properly insured in case we cause an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And the last point on the social contract is even in the use of the road, the majority always aim to protect the vulnerable, right? Pedestrians can use the road as well.
Yes.
And even when pedestrians are doing the utmost foolishness.
Still have a duty of care to that pedestrian.
That's right.
Legally.
You have a legal duty of care to be aware of what's happening around you 360 degrees.
Right.
Right? And so one of the things that prompted the show for me is one of my customers recounted the story of how he got knocked down on Boxing Day morning on his daily exercise run by a driver that veered off the side of the road, has greatly diminished his quality of life, has greatly diminished his ability to perform physically at the rate, the level that he used to.
Right.
It is
essentially shortening his life for no reason.
Absolutely.
Wow.
You know, this conversation is so important because using the road requires several things. Spatial awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
individual and or the understanding and commitment to our individual and collective responsibilities.
Right.
And the most important point, that the majority commits to protecting the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
These conversations are important because they are connected to other conversations.
Right.
These issues aren't just important when we're talking about traffic. These issues are important when we're talking about the political culture, when we're talking about social development, social justice, and the social security net.
Mm-hmm.
These conversations are important in everything that we do.
Yeah.
So, Bahamas, I'm going to try not to have these shows too often, but I will have them when I feel they're necessary. We're taking this road thing far too lightly. We're taking the power of the car far too lightly. And we're taking our responsibility to one another far too lightly.
Yes.
So, Darwin, let me read these texts, and then we're going to go to a break, and we're going to bring in our guest for this morning. The first text says, why don't the road traffic department have 30 inspectors on duty at the stadium? They could be running so many more people through the system. I'm glad you said that, Texter, because a part of our problem with traffic in this country is a lack of functional systems, right? And we can see that the entire traffic system needs an overhaul. And I got to go license my car tomorrow. So if y'all could get them 30 extra inspectors right away, I would be very happy. Ms. Green, do you know motorists spend more on repairs because of bad roads than what they purchase a vehicle for?
Definitely. Definitely.
Man, look here.
I don't even want to give my story right now.
But, my, you know, one of the points I had on deck for our conversation yesterday was this intersection of road management.
Right.
Right? Because that point about potholes.
Mm-hmm.
People are causing accidents by trying to
avoid the potholes.
Potholes,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all the government's fault. We ain't gonna let you all blame the government for this like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Right? Because as a driver, you're supposed to know where the potholes are.
Right.
You're supposed to know where everything in the road is. And
yes.
if you're a regular driver and you drive regularly in that area,
mm-hmm.
how do you forget a pothole?
But Aaron, I'll give you a story, right? So you see how the Eastern Road is set up. After you pass Johnson Road, there's this part in the road where your car will go, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of that causes damage to the suspension
right.
over time.
Right.
So I agree that drivers need to be aware of where the road is bad.
Right.
They do.
And drivers have a responsibility to maintain
their vehicles
mm-hmm. proper, right?
Exactly.
So we got this balance. In this traffic management and this driving culture discussion,
right.
we have this whole element that's about road management
mm-hmm.
and road safety.
Yes.
To what extent is the state fulfilling its obligation to provide safe roads?
Right.
To what extent are you paying attention to your vehicle as a driver? This is the spatial awareness thing.
Right.
Are you listening to your car?
Are you checking your tires? Do you even know
right.
how much gas you can hold? Things like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I've seen an accident where somebody's tire almost fell off in the road. And I realized that the nuts weren't tightened properly.
Wow.
But then I was driving behind them for a long time.
Yes.
And tried to pull up on the side of them to tell them, park the car and check your tire.
Right.
They wasn't paying attention. It's cool. They're doing their own thing. But how do you not notice that? How do you not feel your car?
Yeah, yeah.
And then understand. This is the most important part.
Right.
Once you feel it, you must understand that the obligation is on you.
To get that fixed.
To get that fixed. Because if you cause damage and it is proven that you knew your car was not in good standing, we got a problem.
Mm.
All right, we're going to read these next three texts, and we're going to get to our guest. Oh, this fancy phone. Morning, Miss Green. I have to disagree with you this morning. There is no way at our tax rate anyone should have to spend time looking for potholes in the road. These roads should be paved properly. So until then, we will have to switch lanes to avoid them. They will not learn until the government is sued for having to avoid potholes causing accidents. Well, see, two things. Here's what the dilemma is, right? And this is this balance of obligations.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you ain't disagreeing with me because I talk about this all the time. Who has the cold patch contract? And why does it seem like they're cold patching everything as opposed to properly repairing and maintaining the roads?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't matter. The onus is on you as a driver when you get in your car to be aware of everything in front of you. There is no excuse. There is nothing that warrants you just veering into somebody's lane.
Exactly.
Unless it is a pedestrian. Right. And you're trying to avoid
the pedestrian.
Hitting
yes,
somebody.
Yes.
That's it.
A matter of life or death.
Right.
That pothole is not life and death.
Right.
You can't cause $4,000 worth of damage to my car trying to avoid a pothole to avoid $200 worth of change in a tire.
Right. But if you tell me and I see when I'm driving, I see the pedestrian on your side of the road and I already veering far away to give you space in case you need to come in my lane.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
The onus is on you. Now, we could still sue the government for the damage, right? You could still sue the government.
Right.
Now, but don't tell the government I say you could sue them. Go to your lawyer, right? But don't think that that's an excuse. Another text. Ms. Green, try driving through Nassau Village. How can you be aware of where the road is bad when the whole road is bad? Ha, ha, ha. But see, that's the point, eh?
Yeah.
You know you live in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
You know the roads are bad. And if you live on the Montague foreshore, you know that probably due to seismic activity, a pothole could occur at any time.
Any minute.
And the onus is on you, the driver. And these are the driving cultures. See, when we have this conversation with the marijuana Bahamas,
right,
the same principle will arise.
Exactly.
The onus is on you, the adult, to do the right thing.
Exactly.
Very little, virtually nothing, can take away that obligation to you, the adult, to do the right thing. Great show as usual. Question, how come we could drive perfectly fine when we get to Miami, but when we in Nassau driving, we drive like we are on drugs or like we are mentally challenged? I changed those words to a text. I hope you don't mind.
I think it's one simple answer to that question, enforcement. They will enforce that law.
A culture of enforcement.
Yes.
And you know that even if there's not a police officer there, there may be CCTV,
mm-hmm.
there may be road cameras.
Boy, and you never know who's the police.
Right, somebody could be in an unmarked vehicle.
Right. Over here, you'll see the police in the Ford Explorer pass you after you almost hit the person and they're still gone.
Right, and so this is a parallel, I think, that we're going to find in our marijuana discussion.
Yes.
As well,
yes.
Enforcement culture and enforcement is a big part of the conversation about managing the system.
Exactly.
Madam Green, where are the police mobile unit at these major intersections? Right. Well, some of them are at, well, let me rephrase that. We had a police activity this weekend.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
They were at every intersection.
Looking for license, looking for making sure your lights on,
right,
and everything.
I heard complaints that this was a class discriminatory exercise. Some people felt that they were only in the inner cities, but we saw them on some of the outskirts.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
everywhere.
But yesterday on the ride home from that show, hypersensitive about traffic.
Right.
We're pulling onto the road. We're waiting for our turn. Cars are passing. There's a truck, and the guy is on his cell phone. Mm-hmm. There's a police car with the windows up. And behind the police car, there's another vehicle with the person on their cell phone. Enforcement culture is so important, right? When I was growing up, I was taught, not by anybody in particular, but I was taught that you don't never plead guilty.
No.
You just don't never plead guilty.
Exactly.
Right? I don't know if that's good or bad, enforcement culture.
Right.
But what I do know is that people feel like if the tree fall in the forest and there's nobody around to see it, did the tree really fall?
Right.
And that's a problem.
That is.
That is a problem, especially if you have an accident with another vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can just pretend like nothing happened. And that has happened to me as well.
Right.
On two occasions, somebody has bumped my car from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was not the owner of the car, I couldn't just ignore it.
Right.
I had to deal with it.
Right.
And the person got out the car and threatened me and asked me, why did I get out my car? Did somebody hit it? And I looked at them and I smiled and I ignored them. And I just continued around the vehicle, gathering as many details as I could to identify the vehicle.
Yeah.
And they continued to threaten me very subtly and politely. The person said, it almost seemed as if we had an accident. Anyway, right? These things are important. Thank you, texters. Let's go to this call very quickly, Kermit, if you don't mind, and then we're going to go to a break. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hello. Good morning, Miss Green.
Good morning. How you do?
Hold on. Mom, you turn this down. I've been waiting so long. Hold on. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, I have asked this question in this country on many talk shows for years. When we look at the outlying areas of the Bahamas, Cable Beach, Bay Street, East and West, all the major, what they call the north side of the island,
mm-hmm.
where the elites seem to travel all the time.
Where the suburbs are.
I don't know, you call the suburbs Cable Beach and all of those things.
That's where I grew up on the Eastern Road.
Yeah. I know, but when we come on the south side, we come over Mont Royal.
Yes, sir.
Madeira.
Uh-huh.
Rosetta Street. All those, where the majority of the Bahamians drive on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Our policemen, everybody that basically, I would say, over-the-hill people.
Mm-hmm.
These roads, like I grew up in the valley. There's a main road that goes from Wolf Road up Mont Royal Avenue, up to Hawkins Hill and down to Shirley Street.
Mm-hmm.
That has been in the Centerville area for one past politician bragged about how he was in the House of Assembly for over 40 years.
And they never fixed that road properly.
That was his. That's not even the area where he grew up.
Sparky, that's an immigration policy. That's what I figured out. I figured they're trying to deter people from coming to immigration.
Give me my time because you're going to break.
Yes, sir.
The Right Honorable Perry Christie grew up in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
He was the member and prime minister for the Bahamas for valley, and he bragged over 40 years from 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime minister didn't fix the road where he grew up on. As long as they move out of the area and don't have to pull their car in their driveway in the valley or these areas.
It's like they forget about it.
They don't even drive in those areas no more until this campaign time.
Or they trying to duck traffic.
Well, when they duck traffic, remember they got a police outscore with mm-hmm. a siren and a special built Rolls Royce car. They're all the best shock absorbers in the world.
Boy,
me and our little little Japanese car we try to keep together, we dropping in potholes, breaking up all our shock absorbers. Every day, I think it's a conspiracy to keep mechanics and these doggone minute muscle them with a job.
Boy, look here. Sparky, thank you very much. You've highlighted some really important points about the driving culture and the car culture here, and things that may point us directly to some of our are.
Right.
But there's another point you caused me to think about. You worried about the Honorable Perry Christie not paving roads. I worried about him not protecting the entire area from gentrification. And it seemed like for that road and them roads to get fixed properly, we could allow foreign developers to come in and create communities for people who deserve better roads.
Right.
But that's a critique about class and gentrification.
Yeah.
On that other point you made about it seems as if it's a conspiracy to keep mechanics in wig. Look here, somebody's Grammy is dropping nails and debris all over the roads of New Providence to keep her wayward grandsons in a job changing tires. This is also another part of the driving and road management culture that we have to talk about. But we're going to shift gears when we get back. We're going to talk about another type of culture. On the other side of this break, you're listening to 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green and my special guest host today, Darwin Thompson. We'll be right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
For the past 33 years, Great Commission Ministries has been defending the poor and hurting, feeding the hungry, and sheltering the homeless. We invite you to support our Live to Give program and make a difference in these challenging times. Become a donor by giving a one-time annual gift or a monthly donation of $50 or $100. Call Great Commission Ministries at 325-580 for more details. Or visit our headquarters at 237 Wolf Road. Join Live to Give today. This public service announcement is proudly sponsored by this radio station.
It's happening, and it's all straight talk with no chaser. As Stephen Miller is unleashed on your radio each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's going to be smart talk, ideas, and innovation. Each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on Guardian Radio. Your station for fresh news and smart talk. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior's phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to you. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons?
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Island.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
All right, so. Okay, so Aaron, I opened my computer this morning, right, as we were talking, and I saw this article. It says, be patient. The Attorney General says marijuana legislation is still being drafted.
Okay. So, wow. Thank you, Attorney General, for sending that special message out to us this morning as we engage in this conversation with Valentino Elliott from Marijuana Bahamas. Yes. Good morning, Valentino.
And Darwin, how are you guys?
Good, thank you. How you do?
Morning. Good.
Wonderful.
Thank you for holding on a little bit. I hope you don't mind me using today's discussion, using yesterday's discussion to draw parallels I think are necessary to understand today's discussion.
Not a problem.
All right.
Perfectly fine.
You know, one of the things we're talking about is individual and collective responsibilities, right?
Yes.
And I think one of the biggest concerns for Bahamians in terms of the marijuana liberalization or legalization discussion is how do we legalize it and at the same time protect children and minors and vulnerable people, like people who have people who are substance abusers, people who are experiencing or living through addiction, and people who may have mental health challenges that suggested they shouldn't use the substance.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that being said, I like you said previously, it's a personal responsibility to be in charge of oneself. Okay, you can't necessarily want to blame others for the actions that you're doing personally. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was your decision and your personal choice to do whatever you needed to do, okay, at that particular time. Now, it weighs on your own conscience and your own mindset to say, do I know that this is wrong or do I know that this is right? At the end of the day, we have to be accountable for ourselves and not necessarily put the blame on others along with this, with any type of issue, not just marijuana alone.
Right.
If I'm going out there and I'm going to commit a crime, don't you think I know what is right from wrong? I've been told that this is right or this is wrong at one particular point in my life. I have to be accountable for myself and stop putting the blame on others, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Stop putting the blame on others. Okay, society, persons would blame, okay, it's society, it's the government, it's whoever, it's my auntie or my uncle, you know, I was oppressed as a child. But don't you have alternative ways of actually you getting out there?
Right.
And you watching yourself?
Absolutely.
We are accountable for ourselves.
Now, I made a big presumption just now, and I sort of jumped right into a discussion about recreational use, right?
Yes.
But let me ask you first, what is your organization lobbying for? Are you lobbying to lift the prohibition, legalization of recreational use or medicinal use, or authorization to cultivate and manufacture THC and CBD products, or is it a combination of all of the above?
It's a combination of the above, but we're pushing forward for just the legalization of the use of marijuana within guidelines that actually assist and help grow the economy. Every time when someone hear that you're talking about marijuana or Marijuana Bahamas, they're just thinking you're just a bunch of group of smokers who wants to come together trying to make marijuana legal just so we could smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other alternative industries within the same within the same bracket of
industry. Yeah,
exactly. You know.
So tell us. Go on.
And with that being said, this is what the government has been calling for all of these years. There was always a call. You know, we want new innovative ideas. This is it.
Yeah.
We had during the whole pandemic. That when we were talking about this, trying to reach out to them, they're asking new ideas. We've been giving it to them. It actually was a recommendation put forward by the ERC.
Okay. Specifically to diversifying the economy by exploring hemp-based industries?
Yes. You can use hemp as a means to manufacture all sorts of things, from medication to building materials, to clothing, to eating utensils, you know, universal stuff that we use on a daily basis. And it's all biodegradable.
Absolutely. Are any of the members of your, I want to know a bit about your organization, but are any of the members of your organizations focused on or ready to start creating a new hemp-based industry? So is there anybody focused on industrial hemp, like hemp composite construction materials?
Yes, we actually have. There are a few, but one in particular is, I think the young gentleman, the company's name is Bahamas Hempcrete. He's actually Hempcrete before here in the Bahamas. He actually had to ship it in.
Okay.
Had to get all sorts of approval, and it was a strenuous process, like he said.
But pause right there. So he imported hempcrete products.
Yes.
And he's using them in local construction?
Yes.
Wow. So he has had a conversation with the relevant authorities as to the viability of that product in our building codes.
Now is to say to have the conversation. He's been trying to have the conversation, just as Marijuana Bahamas has been always trying to have that conversation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For a number of years. We started in 2014, and ever since then, we've been trying to meet with officials. Okay?
Okay.
Whether it be on a weekly basis, I can't tell you the countless times that we've been trying to reach out. They know me on a first name basis, basically now. Mm-hmm. They could tell you that, I'm going to call on this particular day. And mm-hmm. They know that.
Well, I mean, I'm glad to see that the being advocacy community is ensuring that they maintain communication with the state. Are there any co-ops or groups of businesses that are communicating and strategizing to prepare themselves for the creation of a new industry?
I've had talks with the executive director for the SBDC that's on it. But until other things have come to, you know, let's make it addressed, let the prime minister personally address it or publicly address it. She only can go so far. But we're preparing to actually meet the demand for businesses who want to get in that industry by way of developing and strategizing ways on preparing business plans.
Okay.
For those different businesses, we're developing a model now for that. And once we get that sorted out, it's just basically waiting for the powers that be to give approval to or give us some guidelines as to say how we formulate each business, you know?
Absolutely. I've been seeing a lot of hemp and marijuana-based products in the market, in the industrial market. One of the things that I was most impressed by was a composite pallet construction. You know, we ship tons of things in and out on pallets. Mm-hmm. And they were combining industrial hemp and seaweed, right? Oh. To make these pallets. Another idea I thought about is we have thyme, and thyme's essential oil is a painkiller comparable to ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Are members of your group or members of the advocacy or lobby community or burgeoning industrialists, right? People waiting to explore the new industry once it's created. Do we have a number of people focusing on medicinal marijuana research, cultivation, and manufacturing?
We are. We actually do. We have a few. We actually have a few doctors who are within our organization who are actually just waiting on approval, like I say, to actually get down and started testing. I myself have done research on it, not locally, but abroad. But I too would like, you know, to see it, you know, us be ahead of that market, because there is a mandate now globally that by the year 2025, the UN is going to push, not just the UN, but it's going to be pushed globally, that marijuana-based medications are going to be legal or for distribution globally.
Okay. Now I see that as a good thing, because it gives people an alternative to opium and cocaine derived painkillers, right? Which have a high risk of addiction attached to their prolonged use.
Right.
That's awesome. So listen, Valentino on the line, and then I got two texts. You ready? Let's get to this caller, eh?
Not a problem.
All right, caller, you're on the clock.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me now, Aaron?
Yeah, man, I can hear you now. Morning.
Good morning to your folks. First of all, I think that gentleman are ready to invest. But because I see the medical purposes, and I also see the industrial purposes of it. But Aaron, you mentioned getting into the minor. Well, you know, cigarette, get to the minor.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal. Alcohol, the most killer. Get to the minor, and it's still legal.
Exactly.
The people is going to abuse marijuana. That's reality. Some is going to abuse it. But since I've been doing a lot of studying, others been doing studying, good gentleman, yourself, we see the powerful benefit that we need to jump on it. I was in Jamaica, and I see the powerful benefit, and you being in Jamaica, and I don't know if the gentleman being in Jamaica, but I marijuana tea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what marijuana tea is good for?
Asthma.
But you know what?
Lung conditioning, some people suggest.
Yes. Yeah. But mental people who cannot sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mild sleeping sentiment.
Yeah, not as good as passion fruit leaf tea, though.
Okay, well, yeah, promote that.
Yeah.
But we, and I'd love to see this draft, because we gonna get on the market. Florida looking at it. Jamaica's gone already on the market. Do you know how much Jamaica makes?
No, but I've learned recently that Jamaica, of all places, has experienced marijuana shortages due to a combination of factors, one of which is, COVID and the lockdowns and the inability for informal farmers to get to their field.
Right.
There had been a severe drought. Uh-huh. And ensuring that they can meet the numbers necessary for export, formal growers or licensed growers may or may not be relying on informal growers to hit.
Right, and that's because of Corona.
Yeah.
But when that is over, you can imagine the profit's going to rise again.
But Pumpkin Eater, I got an important question.
I have two questions and let you go.
Oh, okay.
To the gentleman.
Quick.
He's gone to open up Sheriff into the system because I like to get involved with that. And he's going to open up a pharmacy where people can get this on a legal medical purpose. And if you want to get in contact with me and send more information, my Facebook address, I don't know if I'm on your air and Facebook address, but it's Peter L, like in love, Mahdi. Mahdi is M-C-P-H-E-E.
Okay.
Okay, have a good day.
Awesome. Okay. So, Valentino, I think he was asking about investment opportunities for people who are interested in being a part of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is, I guess, the likelihood that your organization or a local organization will be allowed a dispensary for accessing medicinal marijuana.
Okay. Let me answer those. I think I heard another one in there as well. First, let me address the first one where it was, which is a present issue where we had access to youth.
Mm-hmm. Pause on that one because I want to ask you that question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. We can pass it on. Yes, there are investment opportunities.
Uh-huh.
We've been actually putting together, trying to rally together to put an association together.
Mm-hmm.
We just need the persons of them. Okay. If everyone who feels the need, because I believe that marijuana has been stigmatized so long, a lot of persons are in fear of actually coming out to say that I actually support this.
Mm-hmm.
Behind closed doors, I get all the support. Exactly. Someone to say, okay, I'm affiliated with this particular organization or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, because, you know, maybe their social standing or whatever, maybe. But that person can contact me at either Marijuana Bahamas Facebook page or send me an email at marijuanabahamas@gmail.com.
Okay.
I answer them fairly frequently. I check them every day. If he needs any further details, he can contact me those ways.
Okay.
What's the other?
The other question I think is a bit complicated. I'm not sure if you could answer that at this time. Pumpkinito is very interested on whether average people will have access to medicinal marijuana through dispensaries. Right? I guess, will local people or groups be allowed to set up and operate dispensaries?
Okay. I actually did an overview on the recommendations that we put forward to the drafting of the marijuana legislation. We gave it to the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was sometime last month, I think sometime in February, that we actually gave the Attorney General a draft of this.
Yeah.
And one of the recommendations were to actually have the majority stakeholders. I'm not talking about 51%. I would love to see more than 51%. Every time we say 51%, I'm not intrigued by that percentage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Give me 75 to 80 or even 90%.
I got you.
Majority stakeholders. Let it be Bohemian. Okay, that's what I'm pushing for.
Why not 100%, right?
I don't believe that an industry should be closed out because based on the international market, it's going to keep us competitive.
I got you. Listen.
Our standards are going to be raised. And behemoths, we don't like no one to outdo us. So we're going to improve.
I get you. So let me read these last two texts, and then I'm going to get to the question I think Pumpkinito was getting at. The text says, great show as usual. Tell your guest, how come we could drive, let me pause there. Second text, great show as usual. Tell your guest, bridge rope could be used out of hemp. That would be a cheap material to build a bridge from Nassau to Andrus or Bimini to Miami. I don't know if we can be building bridge ropes from Nassau to Miami, but considering the size of our maritime industry, considering our archipelagic exterior, like we got an out-island situation, considering the amount of boats that move through our country on a yearly basis and the amount of marinas that we have, surely a rope and a boating materials industry is a no-brainer. Thank you, Texter. Oh, Valentino?
Yeah. With that being said, most of the boat ropes globally is made out of hemp.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's what the texter said.
Yeah,
so,
most of them.
Let's get to...
I do agree with someone actually had put forward that idea actually to create ropes to manufacture these.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to improving discussions with anyone who wants to get into it, so that we can put this on the table to before the government, so that we can actually get these businesses up and running.
All right, and you can reach Valentino Elliott at marijuanabahamas@gmail.com, right? So here's that question: Pumpkin Eater was very concerned about minors and children, right? He made the point that, well, look here. Children getting access to cigarettes, children getting access to alcohol. Why would we let the chance that children could get access to marijuana stop us from moving forward? Now, I am going to say this, right? If we use an alcohol as an example, then we should criminalize alcohol and marijuana, right?
If that's the case.
Right. What strategies are you promoting, or is your lobby or your advocacy promoting, to reduce and minimize?
Our stance on it is, let's get it out of the way, that marijuana and minors is a no, okay?
Yeah.
Personally, I'm from being on the standpoint of the president, I don't agree that children should.
All right.
Okay.
So zero tolerance.
There are times that the lines are blurred, meaning medically.
Yeah. But I don't think we're talking about medicinal access. We understand why a child.
It's still in its form.
Yeah.
It's still in its form, and it comes under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Medically, if a child is having seizures and we know that CBD oil, without any risk can actually aid this child, do I keep this from this child?
Yeah. Well, this is in Valentino. Thank you very much. I could reiterate it. You have a zero tolerance approach to minor use of marijuana. That you're facing, one of their biggest concerns is access by minors and creating systems to protect them. The second biggest concern is that you're not lobbying in a vacuum. You're lobbying within an existing drug culture that we don't pay enough attention to. So I'm hoping to have you on again soon so we could delve into some of those issues a bit further. Because if we want this movement to grow, we got to engage all of the issues surrounding it.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. I agree. Listen, Valentino, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. If you're interested in more information, reach out. Email to marijuanabahamas@gmail.com or check them out on Facebook so you can contribute some good ideas or share your concerns with them. I'm Erin Green. You've been on the clock. This is 96.9 FM. I'm Levi Miller. Unleash is up next at 11. Have a great day, Bahamas.